Charanam in the station simulated. Om Aginati Minandasya Jnansana Surakaya Sakshu Sumilatam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Vistams Tafitam Jena Vichara Sama Kapaga Mahanda Bhakti Sakundantika Vanchi Kapa Chudhasta Kripa Sumilatam Vasra Kati Kumanda Vina Vila 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 A reading from the sixth chapter, and we read the verses 5, 6, 7 of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and now we'll hear some of Prabhupada's purports, just a little and go onward. So in text 5, after describing the practice of yoga and how a person who is in yoga, he's renounced all his material desires and he acts, but neither for sense gratification, and he doesn't engage in any fruitive activities. So to act, but not have one's mind fixed on enjoyment and getting the fruit of one's work takes quite a controlled mind. So therefore, in these verses, Krishna speaks about the importance of actually controlling that mind. So he says in text 5, one must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. Yesterday we spoke about the mind's tendency to attach itself to an object of the sense and make the attempt to enjoy it. But one must not do that and degrade one's mind, oneself, by the power of the mind, because the mind is so powerful. So one must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and its enemy as well. So the mind is the friend if the mind is attached to things that elevate the person. And the mind is the enemy of the person, of the soul, if his mind is attached to things that degrade him and bring him down in consciousness. So there are things that elevate us and things that degrade us. In the world today, people tend to speak and think about, it doesn't make a difference what you do, practically speaking, because in their materialistic mundane philosophy, you die and it's over, you're eternally dead, you don't exist anymore and you never will exist, so what's the difference what you do? It doesn't make any difference at all. But according to the Bhagavad Gita and according to Krishna's concept, according to Krishna's words, it does make a difference because we're eternal souls, and how we live our life, how we elevate ourselves or degrade ourselves in our life, what we do with our consciousness, because elevation and degradation is a matter of consciousness, and then the activities follow the consciousness, and the mind, Krishna's explaining, is a central point on consciousness, because again the mind is attached to something, sankalpa vikalpa icha dvesha, it wants and then it doesn't want. So if it can just become our friend and become attached to things that elevate the soul, that elevate the consciousness, and become averse against things that degrade the consciousness and degrade the person, degrade the soul, then everything is in its proper perspective. So Prabhupada's purport here. The word Atma, because the Sanskrit is the word Atma, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in the fifth verse, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the word Atma used 7 times. Udared Atmanatmanam, Natmanam, Abhasadayet, Atmayavahi, Atmano Bandur, Atma Ripur, Atmana. So the word Atma denotes body, mind, and soul, depending upon different circumstances, because it's Atma, in a simple translation, it means the self. So, say, this is myself, and we mean, meaning it's my body. And sometimes we're talking about the self as the mind, and sometimes the self, in the ultimate way, is the soul. So in the yoga system, the mind and the conditioned soul are especially important. So what's especially important in the yoga system? The mind and the body? Is that what it said? Yes, very good. You get an A+. The mind and the conditioned soul are especially important. Since the mind is the central point of yoga practice, it's to control the mind and elevate oneself and meditate upon the super soul. Since the mind is the central point of yoga practice, Atma refers here to the mind. The purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and to draw it away from attachment to sense objects. That's called pratyahara. It is stressed herein that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire of nescience, from the entanglement of ignorance. And the mind should be trained so it pulls one from the entanglement of ignorance. Now, do they teach you that in the university? No. It's true. They don't teach us that. There's no subject on how to control the mind so it elevates one. What would happen if they had that subject? Who? What do you think would happen? Why? Yeah. Good point. So no interest. But there are people who study psychology. But this point isn't there, that there's an actual, there are actual things that one can do that can elevate and purify the consciousness. And how the mind is treated is central to this. So it is stressed here that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire, the entanglement of nescient ignorance. In material existence, one is subject to the influence of the mind and the senses. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. So now we're talking about the makeup of the subtle body, the mind, the intelligence, the polluted consciousness, and the false ego, Ahankara, Manas, Buddha, and Citta. So the mind becomes under the control of the false ego. Ego means sense of self. So having a false ego means a false sense of who we are. So the essence of false ego is to think that we are the separate from Krishna, practically speaking. While in fact, Krishna being the absolute truth, it's not possible for us to be separate from him. So when the mind becomes subordinate, attached to the false ego, entangled with false ego, entangled with the false sense of self, then what it accepts and what it rejects will naturally also be unhealthy for the actual person because it's based on falsity, false conception of who we are. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. And in this way, the conditioned soul may be saved. Saved from what? Saved from being degraded. One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects. Do they teach you that in the university? Why? If they had a course in non-degradation 101 or something like that, and the first point is, don't be attracted to the sense objects. Would anyone attend? They would vomit that class or something like that. They would speak badly about it behind its back. One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects. So this is very difficult for the material mind to accept, that it should not attach itself to objects of the senses and try to enjoy on a subtle or gross level, because the mind first tries to enjoy on a subtle level. And when the mind contemplates the objects of the senses, then attachment develops. And from attachment, what happens? In between. Sangas te sopajayate. One becomes bewildered and one falls down into material life. Bewilderment of memory. There's a sequence described in the Bhagavad Gita. And it happens by contemplating the objects of the senses. Attachment develops. And we try, and the mind holds on to that and sees that of this world as meant for its enjoyment. And it tries to squeeze pleasure. And this specifically is what causes us to take repeated birth in the material world. But on the other hand, if that same mind can become attached to Krishna and absorbed in Krishna and thoughts about Krishna, then that same mind will elevate us due to its attachment to Krishna. So therefore, we can say that the goal of Krishna consciousness is to become attached to Krishna. A simple, honest, and natural attraction to Krishna and attachment. The stage of attachment is called what in Sanskrit? Shakti. When one is attached to Krishna. And this is what we want to do. We want to become attached to Krishna. And if one's attached to something that's going to be the best thing for one, how fortunate it is. How fortunate that person is when one becomes attached to that which is the most beneficial oneself. How fortunate the person is that his natural tendencies can be completely surrendered to if he's attached to the right thing. But if we become attached to the wrong things, to the objects of sense gratification, if the mind becomes addicted to sense gratification, it's so difficult to break those types of addictions. So what is Prabhupada say here? The mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. And in this way, the conditioned soul may be saved. So what does Prabhupada say, glitter of material nature?
Something that glitters, captures your attention, even though there's not much.
There's no substance. It's just glitter. There's no real gold there. It's all glitter and no gold, no substance. No, it's all promise, it's all advertisement, but no fulfillment. So it is very difficult for the conditioned soul to accept this point. But and it is very difficult for the material mind to accept what it wants, what it's trying to grab, isn't going to bring it satisfaction. But that is called training of the mind. The more one becomes attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence and jumps from branch to branch of the tree of the material world. The best way to disentangle oneself is what? To always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness, to always be somehow thinking about Krishna, somehow or another be thinking about Krishna and Krishna's service. That's because the mind can only focus on one thing at a time. And if it's focusing on the objects of sense gratification, very difficult to think about Krishna. And if it's thinking about Krishna, if it's actually absorbed, not superficially thinking, but actually absorbed in thoughts about Krishna, actually absorbed, then there is no scope for Maya to enter, like a cup that's filled with, to the very, very, very top with milk, yes. And actually, cups, they have, they can go over the top, yes? Yes, you can fill it with water or milk, just a little bit over the top. Why? How can you do that? Did you ever wonder about that?
Gravity.
Gravity.
Surface tension.
That's what we call it, surface tension. What does that mean, though? We call it surface tension as if it's maybe has a meaning.
No, I don't want to explain the other way.
Do you know what surface tension means?
Yeah.
What does it mean? In one sentence.
You can say.
Who created it?
The question.
Yeah. Okay. You explained it in one word. Very good. Because we say what I meant by if we say surface tension, it's like it's just like saying something that exists. But it doesn't exist. Just like that, it didn't just happen like that by just appear out of nowhere. Who created surface tension? I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's Krishna's surface tension. Otherwise, why would something so wonderful exist? Because you can go up quite a bit too over the top of a. So if the water or the milk is filled to the very top and held there by Krishna's arrangement, then even if you pour poison on top of it, it will fall off. It will flood right off. So if our consciousness is filled above the very top with thoughts of Krishna, Krishna tension, we can call it, then there's no question of Maya entering. The best way to disentangle oneself is to always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. The word he is used for emphasizing this point, that one must do this. Why does Prabhupada emphasize that one must do this? Does that mean that I don't want to do it, I don't have to do it? What do you mean I must do it? What does it mean? There is an alternative, isn't there? There is an alternative. I mean, there's like more than 6 billion people in the world who are choosing to not do it. Yeah? So there is an alternative. But what if it's actually a conditional cause? Yeah, if you must do this, otherwise you'll be degraded in consciousness, and then your next life will be a disaster. You'll become a lion or a zebra. Have you ever considered becoming a zebra? Good stripes, huh? Huh?
I'm the black and white.
Yeah. Have you ever considered becoming a zebra? Do they have zebras in Kenya?
So many.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered becoming one? Mm-hmm. Why? Because the lions will eat them. Don't lions eat zebras sometimes? Yes? Yes? It's true. And how would, just imagine a lion looking at you and the only purpose of your existence is that he will sink his teeth into your body and rip apart your flesh and kill you and eat you. And he's much more powerful than you. And he doesn't care whether you like it or not. Would you like to be a zebra? I wouldn't either. Did you ever see a lion in Kenya?
So many.
Are you telling the truth or are you lying? I thought I might be seeing a lion young man, but not. So the word he is used for emphasizing this point that one must do this. This is also said, it is also said, now, here's a verse from the Amrita Bindu Upanishad, the second sloka. Mana eva manushanam karanam bandamokshaya bandaya visaya sango muktyai nirvishayan mana. For man, mind is the cause of bondage and mind is the cause of liberation. So therefore, it's clear that, emphasizing the point, you must do this if you don't want bondage but you want liberation. Mind absorbed in sense objects is the cause of bondage, and mind detached from the sense objects is the cause of liberation. Therefore, the mind which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness is the cause of supreme liberation. So more on the mind being the friend or the enemy. For him who has conquered the mind is the best friend. This is 6. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. It's like, if your mind is your enemy, it's like trying to walk forward and also walking backwards at the same time. Now, how fast will you get to where you want to go? Huh? If you're walking, trying to walk forward, but also walking backwards at the same time. Huh? It's difficult, yes? You get nowhere fast, as we would say. So it is that essential a point, and it's a struggle when we have these Kali Yuga minds, because in Kali Yuga, everyone's mind is upadrutaha. It's so disturbed, so unpeaceful. So we try to go forward and the mind attacks us and pulls us in the opposite direction. So the purpose of practicing Eightfold Yoga is to control the mind in order to make it a friend in discharging the human mission. Unless the mind is controlled, the practice of yoga for show is simply a waste of time. Does that mean that all those people and all those different yoga studios and all those different cities of the world are wasting their time? In what sense? They're not using yoga for yoga, they're using yoga for exercise. Just to keep a healthy body, but that's not the purpose of yoga. That's a step, the health of the body, the asanas, are a step towards doing pranayama, which is a step towards pratyahara, or controlling the mind through breathing, to withdraw the mind from sense objects, to placing it under control. So to practice yoga is simply a waste of time unless the mind is controlled. One who cannot control his mind lives always with the greatest enemy, unless his life and his mission are spoiled. When you hear that, you feel encouraged or discouraged?
Yeah.
I'll read it again so you can be there and you can answer the question also. One who cannot control his mind lives always with the greatest enemy, unless his life and its mission are spoiled. Is that encouraging or discouraging? Huh?
Still just there.
Are you one with everything tonight? Is that encouraging or discouraging? Yeah? Well, it's not for me.
Well, I mean, encouraging is
something that
you should fight it.
Yeah. Warrior. But it alerts us to the actual situation, that if we're in a situation where our mind is unbridled and running wild and just being attached to things that are going to kill us and cause us suffering, so it can be discouraging when you realize that you're sick, but it's an opportunity to get better. Unless you realize that you're sick, you won't take the medicine. And then life and mission mission of life can be spoiled. The constitutional position of the living entity is to carry out the order of the superior. As long as one's mind remains an unconquered enemy, one has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, avarice. What does avarice mean?
Extremely greedy.
Greed, extreme greed, illusion, etc. So notice how the mind doesn't like to be controlled at all. That's what we mean, that when we say that the mind is the enemy, it doesn't want to be controlled. You tell it to do one thing, and it wants to do just the opposite. You tell it not to think about this, and it says, why? I want to think about it. I feel like it. Well, don't you know that it's going to cause trouble? I don't care. I like it. It's like some kind of a teenager or something like that. So the mind wants to be only independent and do only what it wants to do because it wants to do it. And it doesn't care about the consequences of what it wants to do. Do you know what that word means, consequences?
Consequences.
Yes, you know what the word means?
Step by step.
Means what?
Step by step.
No, it means the result. It doesn't care. Like say if there's fire here and I say I want to touch the fire. And I don't care about the consequences. I don't care that my hand's going to be burned, the result. So the mind is like that, like a naughty 2-year-old or something too. That it doesn't care. It just wants to do what it wants to do. And when it gets holding on to something, can't stop it. People, they'll smoke cigarettes, and they'll take terrible drugs, and they'll do things that will turn their whole life into hell, and they'll keep doing it. Because why? Because the mind wants it. Because the mind wants to be completely independent, but the mind can never be independent. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. Because the constitutional position of the living entity is to carry the order of the superior. So the mind's natural position is to be subordinate. And we don't like it. But yet, when the mind tries to be independent, it becomes subordinate anyway. Because it has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, greed, avarice, illusion, etc. Like that one time, I was in Melbourne and there was an advertisement for Sprite. You know what is Sprite? What is Sprite?
Cold drink.
Yeah, it's a cold drink. It has lots of bubbles inside. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. And the advertisement said, obey your thirst. The mind says, yes, Prabhu. What would you say if an advertisement said that to you? Anyway, it's the right idea, but the wrong master. But that's what it is. The mind has to, it will always be under control. And it's just got to choose who the master is going to be. But when the mind is conquered, in other words, here's the definition of a controlled mind, that is the friend, one voluntarily agrees to abide by the dictation of the personality of Godhead who is situated within the heart of everyone as Paramatma. So Krishna, I agree, I am yours, I am your servant, I will do as you say. And then we can say, yes Prabhu, and it will be healthy. Real yoga practice entails meeting the Paramatma within the heart. Wow. Meeting the Paramatma in the heart, not just doing asanas, not just breathing, not just what Prabhupada always used to, when he would criticize yoga, he would say, pressing the nose. Real yoga practice, that is not yoga. real yoga practice entails meeting the Paramatma within the heart, actually meeting, having a relationship with Krishna in the heart, and then following his dictation. Now that is what every person is actually looking for, to have that intimate relationship with Krishna and be submissively and happily and lovingly serving that order of Krishna, basically to be under the protection of Krishna, included within Krishna, the group of those who serve Krishna. That is what's satisfying to the heart. For one who takes the Krishna consciousness directly, perfect surrender to the dictation of the Lord follows automatically. In other words, one doesn't have to go through the whole Ashtanga yoga practice. For one who takes the Krishna consciousness directly, Krishna consciousness means basically surrender to the dictation of the Lord. In Saranagati, Krishna consciousness means what Krishna describes it in the 18th chapter of Mahabharata, Saranagata. And this is so important for Arjuna, because Krishna wants Arjuna to fight, and Arjuna's mind says, no, I don't want to fight. And his intelligence has so many, is surrendered to the mind, and his intelligence comes up with so many excellent reasons why he shouldn't fight. And Krishna tells him that even though your reasons are good, you are speaking words, you are speaking words that a learned person, an intelligent person, would never speak. And he takes all of Arjuna's wonderful arguments and he rips them up into 1,000 pieces and throws them away. And he tells Krishna, he tells Arjuna, you are an eternal soul, and all your arguments are based on a different concept than your eternality. What to speak of our relationship? Namitta Karan Bhabhi Sadhi Sachin, that I want you to be my instrument. That's what Krishna consciousness means. To become an instrument of Krishna's desire. And that is what brings satisfaction to a person, to a soul, to a mind actually. Because when the mind is the enemy, when it's grasping after satisfaction on the material level, it is never satisfied. It's always grumbling and complaining and miserable. But when someone surrenders to Krishna and becomes an instrument for Krishna, a willing instrument for Krishna, that brings such happiness to the heart. So if one surrenders to Krishna, the surrender to the Paramatma automatically is there. So what are the symptoms of someone who has controlled the mind? First one is described in 7. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached. In other words, the mind isn't pulling them in the opposite direction from what Krishna wants. His mind is not pulling them to the senses. The supersoul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are the same. So what does that mean? Happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are the same. Does that mean that he doesn't know the difference? He can't tell whether it's hot out or cold out when it's in the middle of the first summer, he puts on a heavy coat. He tolerates it in Krishna's service. It's just, in other words, he doesn't allow these things to influence whether or not he's going to serve Krishna. If it's cold, he serves Krishna. If it's hot, he serves Krishna. If that service is going to bring him honor, he serves Krishna. If the service is going to bring him dishonor, he serves Krishna. If it's going, if it brings him on a level, on the ordinary level, happiness, he doesn't care. If it brings him distress, he's in love. Just like this happens sometimes, that when someone is really in love, they, you know, they don't care if it's raining, they don't care if it's cold, they don't care if, even in the animal kingdom sometimes you see this, is that some little animal and some big creature attacks the baby or something like that, and the mother attacks this huge creature and chases them away because they're so angry that their baby is threatened. I saw that even with, not in the animal kingdom, but half in the animal kingdom. A couple of years ago in Govardhan, there was one young Matuji she gave her young daughter some bananas. No. What is the danger of doing that in Govardhan? You know? You don't know. Well, I wouldn't advise you to walk around Govardhan with a bag of bananas. You know why? What will happen? Huh?
So many monkeys.
All over Vrindavan there are so many monkeys. And so this little girl was walking with her bananas, and you know what happened next? This huge monkey. He was this big at least. And he was as tall as this room. And he was one of those ones who walk around like this. Like they've been to the gym all day long. And he went over to the little girl who had a monkey's, the bananas went in. And the girl went, and the mother, hearing her little daughter scream like that, she picked up this big stick. She found a stick and went running at that big monkey. And she was only this big herself. And the monkey was as big as the room. I'm exaggerating a little. But the monkey immediately ran. He ran. Because he knew that she would do anything to protect her.
And what about the bananas?
You're really Deliwala. You're worried about the bananas. Don't worry. Lady, do we have any bananas for our Prabhu? Oh, I thought you wanted some bananas. No, he didn't get the bananas. The monkey left the bananas. Huh?
Mommy will give more bananas.
To who?
The child.
Oh, yes. Because all stories have happy endings. Like Hindi movies, yes? So every living entity is intended to abide by the dictations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. When the mind is misled by the external illusory energy, one becomes entangled in material activities. Therefore, as soon as one's mind is controlled through one of the yoga systems, one should be considered to have already reached the destination. In other words, one following the yoga system, if one has controlled one's mind, one will get the result of following the yoga system, which is to achieve the super soul. One has to abide by superior dictation. When one's mind is fixed on the superior nature, he has no alternative but to follow the dictation of the Supreme. The mind must admit some superior dictation and follow it. What do you think about that? The mind must admit some superior dictation and follow it, because if it would always be under superior dictation. It's either going to be the superior dictation that degrades one or the superior dictation that elevates one. The effect of controlling the mind is that one automatically follows the dictation of the Paramatma, or Supersoul. Because this transcendental position is at once achieved by one who is in Krishna consciousness, the devotee of the Lord is unaffected by the dualities of material existence, namely distress and happiness, cold and heat, etc. This state is practical samadhi, or absorption in the Supreme. So if one is absorbed, if one has controlled one's mind and is absorbed in his service, his loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any desire for any selfish desire, then that is practical samadhi. It is automatically achieved by one who is in Krishna consciousness. Now, going further into the symptoms, these were... There's an elephant outside. That's what they sound like, little ones maybe. But not, aren't they something like that? So one of the symptoms of one who has conquered his mind is what we said, he's equal to all things. But here's some more symptoms too. These are more advanced systems. A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi, a mystic, when he is fully satisfied by virtue of his acquired knowledge and realization. And such a person is situated in transcendence. He has attained complete satisfaction by virtue of his awakened relationship with the Supreme Lord. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He can be self-controlled because he's satisfied. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones, or gold, as the same. Pebbles, jewels, gold. He sees them as Krishna's. He sees them from an unselfish perspective. Now, how does one gain this incredible, and the next one's going to be even more incredible in that sense. But how does one gain such a depth of realization? In other words, how does one attain a depth of absorption in Krishna consciousness that one is beyond all these dualities and all these desires, and one has controlled one's mind? So that question is really answered by Prabhupada in the purport here. Book knowledge, in other words, just knowing it theoretically, book knowledge without realization of the Supreme Truth is useless. In other words, there are material scholars who, that Prabhupada will, Krishna actually criticizes them later, Mayaya Apita Gyanam. They're so intelligent, but their intelligence is misused. They'll study Bhagavad Gita, they'll read the Bhagavad Gita, they'll know Sanskrit perfectly, and they'll reach the exact opposite conclusion that Krishna is speaking. Instead of saying that that one, the soul should surrender to Krishna, everyone should surrender to Krishna, they reach the conclusion that we are Krishna. What do you think about that? Is that possible, that you could be the Supreme?
No.
No. I was wondering whose side you were on. You think you could be your Krishna? No.
It's part of
Krishna. It's none different, but not the Supreme. But these great, great scholars, so you're greater than these great scholars, because you understand what Krishna means, and they have completely the wrong understanding. So book knowledge without realization. So they know everything but haven't realized anything. So book knowledge without realization of the Supreme Truth is useless. This is stated as follows. Atak si Krishna namadi na bhaved grahyam indriyai seva mukhi jivadav svayam eva sparatyada. Very important verse. No one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Sri Krishna through his materially contaminated senses. In other words, by our own power, we cannot access the spiritual realm and understand Krishna, understand the absolute truth. No matter how intelligent we are, we cannot access that by our own abilities. Because the nature of the absolute truth is spiritual, eternal, and it is Satchitananda, and our nature is with these material things, material blunt senses, just cannot penetrate. It's material. Matter cannot find spirit in that way. So taksi Krishna namadi nabhavetgraya means that. But how can one understand sevan mukhihi jivadav svayam evasparatyadav, that one adopts a full serving mood, then one can understand the Absolute Truth by the mercy of the Absolute Truth. So it takes, this Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught this very, very strongly. And Srila Prabhupada adopted this mood also. He learned the lesson perfectly from his Guru Maharaj, that one needs the serving mood. And that is the process that causes Krishna, that conquers Krishna, in a sense, and causes Krishna to bestow his mercy so that one can understand. And mere book knowledge or mere intellectualism and mere this, it's not possible. But if one has a serving mood, then by Krishna's grace one can understand. So here's the translation of this important verse. No one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of Sri Krishna through his materially contaminated senses. Only one, when one becomes spiritually saturated by transcendental service to the Lord, of the transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord revealed to him. This Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada continues, is the science of Krishna consciousness. No one can become Krishna conscious simply by mundane scholarship. One must be fortunate enough to associate with a person who is in pure consciousness. Etc. So Prabhupada explains here. And then Prabhupada, in the last line in this, if he refers to seeing stolen and pebbles as gold is the same, he says in his last line of the purport, he is transcendental because he has nothing to do with mundane scholarship. This is the devotee who surrendered to Krishna. For him, mundane scholarship and mental speculation, which may be as good as gold to others, are of no greater value than pebbles or stones. He sees the mundane scholarship, he's not impressed because they have reached the wrong conclusion. They have read the whole Ramayana, and then they ask the question, a very good book, but I just had one question. Sita is whose mother again?